Hey, it's Claire and James here. Before we get stuck into this week's episode, we just want to let you know that we're about to launch a first-of-its-kind tool that's going to help you identify where you might be holding yourself back from living your fullest potential at midlife.
We're naming it the Midlife Reset Audit. And what's incredibly exciting is that it'll offer you your personalized strategies that give you the most impactful wins, so you can quickly take back control of your body, mind, and life.
Now, we're just putting the finishing touches to it, making it the best it can possibly be. So if you'd like to be the first to take the audit, pop your name on the waiting list. Just go to themidlifementors.com/audit.
In this week's episode, we're talking divorce, and I'm flying solo, not because Claire and I have got divorced, but we just had a scheduling clash. We'll be talking to Kate Daly of Amicable, whose own divorce experience caused her to look around and see that there was a gap in the market for a service that would help couples actually talk and reach a mutually beneficial agreement around their divorce that would be sheltering for themselves and their children. So Kate has some really useful advice on this podcast. I think you're going to love it. If you've gone through a divorce, are going through one, are thinking of one, there's some really solid advice here, and also advice on how to repair and look after your relationship. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, I'm James Davis.
And I'm Claire Davis.
We're the Midlife Mentors, here to lift the lid on how to achieve health and happiness.
The balanced, no-nonsense way.
Welcome to another episode of Midlife Mentors with me, James. And there is no Claire following on. I am flying solo today. Well, almost solo, because of course I do have a guest with me. And we're going to be talking a hot topic that I think does affect a lot of people, especially midlife, which is divorce. But before we introduce our guest, just a little update on what Claire and I have been up to since the last podcast. Well, we were meant to have our talk at Soho House, but with the end of the Screen Actors Guild, they suddenly had an influx of bookings and cancelled loads of events, ours being one of them. So sadly, that went by the wayside, but will be picked up again in January, and hopefully with another range of topics added on as well, so further dates for that. Other than that, we've just been keeping swimming in the Lido. The temperature is getting colder and colder, 8 degrees this week. And it's currently sunny but cold in the UK here. So I'm sure that water temperature is going to be down another degree by the weekend. So we're loving it. It's very invigorating, but it's going to be an experience. We've committed to swimming all through the winter. So yeah, let's see how that goes. Anyway, without further ado, let me introduce my guest. So I'm joined today by Kate Daly of Amicable, which is a divorce specialist service. And she's also the host of the Divorce Podcast. Welcome, Kate.
Oh, welcome. Thank you, James. It's lovely to be here. I was just thinking about your cold swimming. I have a cold shower in the morning, but that's not quite the same. I'm not sure the temperature gets down to 8 degrees in my cold shower, but yeah, good for you.
Well, it's very good you do that. I actually finish every morning. I have a normal shower, and then I go cold at the end for like 1 to 2 minutes.
Same.
Yeah, it's great.
Makes a massive difference, doesn't it? I really think it definitely has a mood boost, and I think it definitely impacts your immune system as well. So yeah, I've been doing that for about a couple of years now.
Yeah, so, fantastic. Yeah. Good on you. But yeah, I have to say, having doing the cold showers and actually getting into 8 degrees cold water, quite different.
Yeah,
very big way to know. So, Kate, just tell us a little bit. We all know that midlife divorce rates are rising. And statistics say that more and more divorces at midlife are being initiated by the women in the partnerships. Do you have any kind of view on why that is?
Well, yeah, you're right. The sort of average age or the peak age for getting divorced is around 42 for women and around 44 for men. So it is a real midlife kind of issue. I think, and you're right to say that in the sort of under the old law system, it was a lot more stark because there were a lot more women who initiated the divorce than there were men. Now we have a system where you can actually do a joint divorce, then it's kind of not as stark anymore. But yes, typically women are more likely to articulate their dissatisfaction. So it's not that women are more dissatisfied, but they're just more willing to articulate it and actually want to bring about a change in circumstance rather than men. So there is quite a gender imbalance in that. And I, as I say, I don't think it's because women are necessarily more dissatisfied. I think it is just tend to be more action focused. Mm. And a lot of men will deal with it by compartmentalizing. So just putting up different walls in their head so that they can carry on with their life and not rock the boat. Whereas women tend not to do that. They're not as good necessarily as, or choose not to compartmentalize in quite the same way and want everything to be kind of just out there, talked about and discussed. And sociologically, it's been more typical of women to talk about their dissatisfaction than it has been for men. Typically, men tend to bottle things up a lot more. And I think that is definitely changing, but we've still got a lot of kind of societal unpicking to do around that at this point. There isn't quite the same balance between men and women yet, but it is becoming more common to find men talking about their feelings and about unhappiness or dissatisfaction in relationships and approaching their partner for constructive conversation. So it's certainly on the change. Mm. But yes, traditionally, it's just been a lot more female focused and female driven.
Yeah, it's so interesting you say that. Actually, I was just reading something the other week saying exactly what you were saying, that women are much more likely to actually not to put up with dissatisfaction in a relationship, to voice it and to mm. be prepared to, you know, to change it or leave it, whereas men will just kind of not want to rock the boat, I think.
Yeah,
and I think that's it. Yeah. I think for a lot of men, if they're dissatisfied, it's almost they fear saying it for upsetting their partner further. Mm. Certainly, you know, when I speak to my peer group, that's the thing. It's just like, oh, you know, I kind of want the easy life. So even though I'm not happy, I won't articulate what I'm feeling just to not rock the boat further. Mm. I think, you know, we need to start having those conversations and opening up, because when we communicate, it obviously brings awareness to the fore. Then we can start to, you know, work on the issues that are there and, you know, either patch things up or go our separate ways. Now, I know that your company, mm. Amicable, is very focused on actually having a good divorce, right? Mm. So can you just talk a little bit about how that came about and your personal experience?
Yeah, well, I've been divorced twice. The first time, I was quite young when I got married. We realised pretty quickly that it wasn't going to work. And that was quite a sort of functional, I'd call it quite a functional divorce, because we didn't have any children. We just bought a house. So we're both working, you know, there wasn't much to argue over. We both were young and we knew we were going to sort of form our onward lives. So when I then remarried and had children, and it was a lot more complicated than when I went through a second divorce. And maybe also because the first one had been quite smooth, I wasn't expecting what actually happened, which was a very long, painful, drawn out process. I was escaping from an abusive relationship, so that had been going on for many years, and it was difficult to sort of get to a point where I was brave enough to voice that I was going to leave. I don't know how much you know about it, but typically in an abusive relationship, at that point, the victim decides to leave, that becomes a real pinch point, and it did for us. And then when you throw in the kind of legal system on top of that, that exacerbated things rather than like calming things down, putting some distance between us, it seemed to ratchet everything up. And coming through that, having gone through that both emotionally and financially, at the end of it, it spent huge amounts of money. It had taken an extremely long time, and we were in a worse position. Even though we were in a pretty bad position to start, we were in an even worse position by the time we came to the end of it. And I started to think, well, okay, I had difficult circumstances anyway, but really, you know, was that was that how it had to be? Did I do something wrong? Well, how did that become such a big mess? And the more I started to look into it and look at alternatives perhaps that we could have used or things that we could have done differently, the more I realized that the legal system just wasn't very helpful. And I think it sort of occurred to me that the legal system is based on an adversarial system. It has to be, you know, from a criminal perspective. But to try and then superimpose an adversarial legal system onto a family, it just didn't really seem to work. And I kind of started to think, well, I wonder if there is a different way. Obviously, there has to be some elements of the legal system you can't avoid, but maybe there are other ways of navigating those early times that could get people onto a better pathway that wouldn't lead them all the way down that legal route. And maybe if people worked together and saw family separation and breakdown as something you could do in a positive way with your children in mind, where you could come out as really good, strong co-parents, then that would be a better way of looking at it. So I sort of assumed it must be out there and maybe I hadn't seen it. And the longer I looked and the more I couldn't find it, the more I started to think, well, actually, I think there's something in this. And so if it's not there, then I'll create it. And I knew from sort of a personal perspective that I wanted to be able to do this at scale, and that wasn't my bag. You know, my background is counselling psychology. I could understand what sort of product and service we'd need, but I didn't know how to monetize that or how to grow it or how to turn it into a brand and a big company that could help lots of people, because that's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to just be Kate in Southwest London doing the local people and all that. I wanted to have something that lots of people could benefit from. And so that's why I went into business with my co-founder, Pip Wilson, who had a business and technology background. And she and I talked about how we could scale the business and how we could turn it into something that was, for the benefit of more people. And that's what motivated me. I wanted to help lots of people to avoid a really sort of old-fashioned and adversarial way of separating. And that's kind of how Amicable came about, born out of my own experience and a desire to stop anybody going down the same route that I had or help people avoid that.
I think it's great when businesses launch from personal experience like that.
Same for you, isn't it?
Same for us. Same thing. Like I've obviously gone through divorce. Claire's had two divorces as well. And it's so interesting what you say. It is an adversarial system. So even if you start out being amicable, and here's the thing, it's not actually in the best interest of the lawyers always for you to be amicable. If you're being really cynical, the longer they can drag it out, the more money they earn. I was very lucky with my divorce and Claire was with hers, that they were quite clean and quick, and they did remain amicable. But of course you do hear horror stories of people being years down the line and all the money's gone, but they're still arguing over what's left, which is nothing because the lawyers have got it all. So I think there's definitely such a need for what you're offering now. Tell us about the kind of makeup of your team you have at Amicable. So if someone came to you, like, what could they expect in terms of the people they'd interact with? Mm. I know it's not just lawyers, is it? It's all kinds of...
No, well, we sort of bill ourselves as we're not a legal... So we're not a legal service, we're not solicitors. So we do have some solicitors who have chosen to work with us, and they are people who have given up what's called their practice certificate. So they're not practicing as lawyers, but they're practicing in the amicable way. So we use a process called GROW, which your listeners may have heard of, because it's a very simple coaching model. And so when people come to us, we're helping them come to agreements as a couple or as a family, using the model of setting goals. So what would a good outcome look like? We look at the reality of their situation, which is sometimes called in legal sort of terms, the financial disclosure. So what have you got? What assets as a family do you own? And then we say, well, look, if these are the goals, this is what a good outcome would look like. This is what you envisage, life to be like at the end of this process. And these are the resources we've got to play with. How can we best split these resources to meet these goals? And that gives a series of options, the O of GROW. And we look at the different options and we might stress test them. Will they work in 10 years' time, 20 years' time? Will they work if the children do X or Y? We look at all the different things that could happen in life and sort of stress test them, or we might do some cash flow modeling around them to make sure that they actually work. And then we look at the different options and we try and help people negotiate around a particular option, one that suits the whole family. And we help them then negotiate the fine detail. And that becomes the W, what we're going to do. And then obviously we turn all of that work into all of the legal documents that people need. And we manage the court process for them going in front of the court. So alongside that, you've got the divorce process itself. When people are sort of ending the legal marriage, so we can do the paperwork for that. But there's nothing really much emotionally to commit to that process anymore, because we now have no fault divorce. So you can agree as a couple that you're going to divorce each other, a joint application, or you can do a sole application if that's more representative of kind of what the situation has been. So people get a choice, joint or sole. And then that is just an administrative process. But the sort of people that you encounter through our process come from a variety of backgrounds. So some of them, as I say, are lawyers who've given up their practice certificate because they don't want to work with individuals anymore. And they don't want to, you know, be using that system to get more for one person, which means you're getting less from another. So we've obviously got lawyers who've given up their practice certificates. And then we've also got people who've come from perhaps a mediation background. So they might have been working with couples in the past to help them in a mediation process. And they've come to use the amicable grow and negotiation process, which is different to mediation. Maybe we'll talk about that in a bit. And then we've got people who've come from my kind of background. So they've got a psychological background. They may have been family consultants, or they may have been child specialists. So there's a variety of different people. All of them are trained in the legal, but more importantly than being trained in the legal, they're trained in conflict resolution, negotiation, and in working with couples. And that's the key, because, you know, this is really about the interaction between two people. And there isn't a lot of legal stuff in most people's divorces, unless there's complicated trusts or complicated jurisdictional issues or those sort of things, which for most of us there isn't, then realistically the difficulty and the anxiety that a divorce creates is a human issue rather than a legal issue. And we always say divorce is an emotional issue with legal and financial consequences. So if you attend to it as an emotional issue and you work with people going through that sort of journey of change, then that's how you help people to stay on track, to stay focused on what's right and good for them, what's right and good for the family. And most importantly, that's what allows them to continue, if they've got kids, to continue to be really good co-parents in the future. And that's the most important thing, because all of the studies show it's not the divorce itself that impacts children, but it's the way it's handled by the parents. So there are lots of studies that show your children can achieve as much academically, socially, and emotionally as any other child, even if you're divorcing, if you can handle it in the right way. And that has to be the biggest incentive for anybody going through a divorce.
Yeah, of course, it's a massive one. And also, you know, common sense would tell you, if you can be amicable and discuss things kind of rationally, you're going to get a better result for both people. But you must come across cases where, you know, one partner is feeling wronged and is very vindictive and just doesn't want to go down that path. So what would happen then?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, it's rationally, of course, this is the right way of doing it, but we're not always being rational at the points of stress and at points of change. Of course we're not. So it's not that you have to be in a really good place to come and use the amicable service. We are used to dealing with people who are suffering, who are deeply sad, who are deeply hurt, and sometimes they're very angry. And there's different things. There are some people for whom this service just isn't going to work. But I always think that you should at least have a discussion about it, because everybody thinks, you know, in the heat of the moment, when a relationship has broken down, nobody thinks particularly highly of their partner. And honestly, if I had a pound for everyone that said they were living with a narcissist, then I would be a millionaire.
It's such a buzzword now.
It's really frustrating. Yeah, it's such a, I'm living with a narcissist. Yeah. And, you know, narcissistic personality disorder is less than, you know, 0.5% of the population. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage. And therefore, you know, you've got to be a bit careful using these buzzwords because they're not particularly helpful. It's okay to be hurt. You don't need a label. You don't need a big diagnosis. It's all right to be hurt. And sometimes helping people understand that they're on a journey and that they're at different points in the journey, depending on sometimes whether they've been the instigator of the split or not, that can be helpful in just centering people to say, okay, I'm feeling like this. I'm entitled to feel like this. But I can deal with that slightly separately and bring my rational side to working out what we need to do on a practical side. So I always think it's really good for people to have counselors or therapists involved in their divorce journey, because that's where you can take the hurt. That's where you can learn about patterns in relationships that will then help you make different choices next time and potentially help other people around you as well. So I think having a specialist when you're feeling really hurt is important. And sometimes taking a little bit of extra time, you know, if you're the instigator, usually you've been thinking about this for several months, if not years, and therefore you're all ready to go and in a rush to get things sorted. You cannot understand why your partner is not on the same page of wanting to sell the house and get the stuff sorted and divide the pensions and everything else. And it's frustrating. But they are in a very different time frame to you. And so some patience at the beginning can save you huge amounts of time and huge amounts of cost. So that's a really key thing. Just if you are in that really hurt and angry state, it usually indicates you need a bit more time. Now, the sort of $10 million question is, well, how much time do you give somebody before you kind of label them as stalling and not willing to engage? So I think for everybody, the starting point is give your partner some time. If in 3 to 6 months' time, nothing has moved on and they're not willing to accept any kind of therapeutic or supportive coaching type help, they're not doing anything, they're just stuck, then you might need to think about a different process where you can force the agenda a little bit more. So, you know, having a solicitor to write a letter or using the court process or something like that. For some people, you know, it's absolutely necessary. So it's not that amicable is achievable for everybody, but you don't have to be amicable at the moment you're looking for a service. We can still help you with that emotional journey. That is our skill set, to help people with the emotional journey. So particularly when you've got kids, if you want to try to maintain that co-parenting relationship and to have that relationship in the future, then finding a service like Amicable is a really good shout, because we can help with that emotional journey.
Fantastic. I love your advice there about, you know, keeping your boundaries, but having patience at the start. So I think that is so important, and knowing kind of where you are and where the other person is, or at least having an understanding of that is so important.
Yeah.
So something I wanted to ask you about, Kate, is I guess it's from personal experience with divorce. Like, I think as we think of divorce, we think of the pain and the emotion between the two people involved, and if they have children, between the children. Mm-hmm. But there's a broader context as well. I think, you know, you have family, and I don't mean like the children here. Mm-hmm. I mean like the parents, mm-hmm. the groups of friends. How do people go about unpacking that? And you get a situation where you're kind of like dividing friends up, or deciding, you know, whose friend and what the kind of boundaries for seeing each other socially. What's your advice on that?
Well, it's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because we've done some surveys and some research on this. We have a friends and family campaign running at the moment, and we've done some work to look at the impact of friends and family on divorces and what happens. And what we can see is that lots of people, when their relationship breaks down, they turn to friends and family for advice. And this can be either a very positive thing, but sometimes it can also be a very negative thing as well. So there's advice and there's support, and knowing who to go through to for advice versus support becomes quite key in looking at outcomes in divorce as well. So our friends and family love us. Primarily us as the individual, don't they? And your family in particular rather will be batting for you and will be nervous for you and worried for you if you're going through a divorce. And so sometimes their advice is based on their fear rather than really what's going on in your relationship. So you can often get some kind of bum steers from family because they love you and because they care about you and because they're worried for you, but it doesn't make their advice right. So I think you have to be very careful about taking advice from family and friends. And what we would say is make sure you get some proper advice from a legal professional or, you know, an amicable type service, and use your friends and family for support. But it's very tricky as a friend and family member because you don't want to, you have to try to a fine line. You want to support your person, but at the same time, you've got to remember that anything negative you say about the other person is only going to damage the relationship between potentially two co-parents. And if there are children involved, it's particularly important as a friend or family member of a divorcing person is to keep your sort of opinions about the other person to yourself. There is a big difference between the individual venting about their partner and you joining in. You can support them without joining in. And that's really important because you don't want to demonize the other person. The other person, as I say, particularly if you've got children, is going to play a role in their lives. And therefore, it's really key to try and support rather than kind of slag off the other person and to make things worse.
Chime in with that. Never liked her. Exactly. Yeah, the reasons why.
Yeah. I mean, it's natural. We all do it, don't we? And we think that by agreeing with our friend or family member, we're being supportive, but you can be supportive in lots of different ways. You can just listen. You don't have to comment. You don't have to go down the rabbit hole with them. You can try and keep them being as even-handed as they can and trying to see the other person as the other parent, for example, rather than just as the person who's hurt them, to help them separate the relationship that they have with their ex with the relationship they want their kids to have with their ex, and to remember why they married them in the first place and why they got together in the first place, and to try and keep some of those things in mind, you know, in the longer term of being a good friend to them, because ultimately you want them to heal. And, you know, the bitter recrimination isn't particularly helpful for healing or moving on. And none of us as friends and family can ever know what's actually gone on in a relationship. There are always two sides, and there's always the other perspective. And so just trying to support rather than defame is definitely something to watch for friends and family. And it's important to think about how you're going to communicate to them as the couple. If you're the couple who are separating, then it is important to have a conversation about who you're going to tell in what order, and what you're going to say to friends and family. And, you know, we work with a lot of people now where, you know, we do some sort of scripting and coaching because they actively don't want the other person, you know, criticized or blamed. And they want to make sure that grandparents are saying positive things to the children and that kind of thing, about both parents, and that they are being supported as a parenting team. So you can do quite a bit of work on, you know, what you want to say and have a comms plan effectively for your friends and family so that you're on the same page from the beginning. And that can really help because it gives you the control then as well. So divorce is often a time where we feel completely out of control, completely at sea. But actually, if you can have a session with your partner and sit down and say, right, let's think about who we're going to tell and what message we're going to give, and let's be on the same page about it, that's really powerful, because then everybody in your circle has the same message and is talking in the same terms. And that helps protect your children. And it means your children aren't going to overhear anything from there when they're at their friends' houses or anything like that. It just gives you that sense of control back when you probably need it the most. So
that's great advice. I love that, about having a joint comms plan so that everyone's on the same page and you kind of stop those whispers and the gossip. Great.
Yeah.
So Kate, if someone's like thinking about initiating a divorce, or, you know, they're down the road and it's not going as they want, how can they reach out to you and find you?
I think you've got to be sure, before you reach out to anybody, you've got to be sure the relationship is over. And therefore, you need to think about, have you tried everything? to get this relationship back on track. Because if you haven't, then that's going to live with you. So you've really got to do your work on trying to understand, is this relationship salvageable? So the first thing anyone should really be doing is talking to their partner and thinking about getting some relationship help and counseling, whether that's coaching or counseling, or whether it's the two of you sitting down and thinking about what's important to you, where you want to go, what the next phase of your relationship looks like. So the first thing I'd say to anyone is don't reach out to a divorce service when you're trying to actually decide whether or not the relationship is over. Reach out to each other, reach out to a professional who can help you to identify whether or not the relationship is salvageable. And we do have some blogs on, is it over? Should I leave? That kind of question. There are lots of books and exercises you can do, in terms of self-care, thinking to help you think about whether or not this relationship is giving you what it needs and whether there are changes or whether there's something more fundamental about it that means it's over. But if it is over, and it being over doesn't have to be a bad thing. It might be sad because it's the end of something, but it doesn't have to be a bad thing. And particularly when you've got children, you are thinking about, you don't want to be modeling a bad relationship. So this whole notion of staying together for the children is one that we don't hold any store by, because kids will be happy when their parents are happy. So happy separated parents are much better than unhappy together parents. So that's a real kind of thing for people to think about. This notion of just staying together because it's what you should do or it's better for the children is a non-starter. Kids are watching your relationship and they're learning relationship behaviors from yours. So if you're not in a functioning relationship, then you're just paying that forward to them, and that's not good. You want to be able to model to your kids that if your relationship is in trouble, there are things you can do about it. But if it's come to its end, then you go your separate ways and you become happy separated parents. So that's really key. But if they've decided the marriage is over, then we offer free 15-minute calls to people. So you can ring up individually, because sometimes it's hard to do it as a couple straight off. But you can ring up individually to start with, book a call with one of our experts, and we'll talk you through the divorce and separation landscape, the sorts of things you need to think about. The first thing we're going to talk to you about is find a process that works for you. And it's not always the amicable process. It might be mediation, it might be going to a solicitor, it might be going through arbitration, or it might be, because there are safety concerns, using the court. So we'll talk about, you know, what's best for you as an individual and you as a family, and try and steer you to find a process that works well for you. If it's the amicable process, fantastic. The next part of that would be then to get your partner onto a call, because as I say, we're a couples service, so we only work with couples. So for some people, they've been thinking about it a long time. They don't feel traumatized or upset by the split. And therefore, for some of those people, they'll want to book a joint call straight off. And we can have a joint call with them, talk about their goals, what they want out of a process, and create a divorce plan for them. And then we go from there.
Oh, I think it's great that this service is out there, it exists, that you've created this thing. Thank you so much, Kate. I know people are going to really love this. How can people find you? What should they go to like find out more information and book that call?
Go to our website, amicable.co.uk. On the front page, you'll see book a 15-minute call. So you can book an individual or a joint call. That's absolutely fine. We're on all the usual places. Amicable World is our Instagram. We're on Twitter, LinkedIn, if you want to connect with us. So yeah, all the usual places. And if you search Amicable Divorce, we'll come up, or Amicable World for Instagram.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Kate. It's been great having you on. Have a fantastic Brilliant. Day.
Thanks, James. Lovely to talk.
Yeah. You've been listening to The Midlife Mentors with Claire and James Davis.
Yeah. We'd love to hear from you. So drop us a line at info@themidlifementors.com. with any questions or topic suggestions.
And make sure you join us on our Facebook page and YouTube channel. You can find us under The Midlife Mentors. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. And just before you go, we wanted to remind you that the waitlist for the Midlife Reset Audit is now open.
You can be the first to take this revolutionary new tool to helping you live your healthiest, happiest midlife by signing up at themidlifementors.com/audit.